Parshas Bo. As we mentioned previously, Sukkah, which appeared in the edited version, also included the Sukkah that the Rebbe spoke on Gimel Shvat, appears quite lengthy in the written version. So we're not going to be able to go through the Sukkah in its entirety, rather touch on a number of points and lessons which are relevant to us. And to try to extract, if we can, at least to our limited minds, what is the underlying theme of the Sikha that runs throughout. So, as we mentioned on Tuesday, we raised the question that many people have, which is that when we talk about preparing for Mashiach, we talk about learning Chassidus, we never talk about learning on a whole new level in preparation for the Geula. So many people immediately have the question, even if they may not have the nerve to verbalize the question. The question that many people have basically is, listen, I'm more or less a simple person. I'm not that gifted, I'm not that brilliant, or I don't have such great learning skills, and I don't have that much time, and I don't have that much energy. So how does anybody realistically expect me to learn Chassidus on such a level, to actually be able to say that I am prepared for the Geula, that I am ready for all the revelations of Geula, because by learning Chassidus on the highest level. Now, many people could say, listen, when the revelations come, I'm sure they'll be quite wonderful, I'm sure they'll be fabulous, I'm sure they'll be really exciting, but right now, at this point, I can't say that I am holding by those things. When they come, they'll happen, and it'll be all very wonderful. But to expect me to be ready for them, to expect me to be on the level that I am ready for infinite revelation, the truth is, you know, when you talk about finite levels of godliness, most of them are way over my head, and you start talking to me about revelations of infinity, of Atzmos, of essence, all of these things, they sound very nice, they're very wonderful, but they don't really have to do with me. Now, as we explained, that according to Chassidus, the whole purpose of the process of redemption, taking so many thousands of years, is in order that we actually be ready for it. Because if the Eibishter wanted to create a world in which everything, in which he was fully revealed, he could have done so, and that would be the end of the story. Because the Eibishter could basically do whatever he wants. But the point that the Eibishter wanted is that he wanted a dirba tachtena, meaning that lowly beings who inhabit a lowly world, who are finite, limited beings with all their limitations and all their hang-ups and all their issues and all their problems, should be suitable vessels for the revelation of God. So if Geula is going to come along, Mashiach is going to come along, and nobody's really particularly ready for it. Everybody's just, you know, we want it because we were told that we're supposed to want it. Some of us are even willing to work hard for it because we know that the Rebbe said that that's our job and we have to work hard in order to try to bring the Geula. But to say that we're actually ready for any particularly godly revelation, many people that seems something that's far out of their reach, they barely have a chance maybe to learn a half hour or an hour here and there, and even then only on a very simple level. To start talking about being prepared and being ready for infinite revelation is something that for most people is not really, doesn't really feel like it's within their reach. One of the points that we explained was that there is a difference between a power that a person has and a power that is given to them. The truth is, it's absolutely correct that by definition, a finite, limited being with a limited mind and a limited heart and limited tools cannot be a vessel for infinite revelation. It's impossible. A person who is finite and limited cannot expand their mind or heart to the point that they should be a suitable vessel for infinite revelation. That is true. It is a fact. It's impossible. However, as we said, the Eibishter could do whatever he wants. So being that the Eibishter could do whatever he wants, that from the point of Atzmus, in other words, the Eibishter himself has no limits, and therefore he can make it possible for a finite, limited being to be able to expand their vessel to such a degree that they can receive infinite revelation. In other words, it's not your power, you actually don't have the power, but the power can be given to you. The power to expand one's mind and heart to be ready for infinite revelation, that power can be given to you. So the question is, okay, if the power comes from the Eibishter anyway, so what do we gain? If the whole point of the process of exile was so that we work on ourselves and we grow and develop and expand our and break out of our limits to the point that we are suitable vessels for infinite revelation, if anyway the power to do so comes from the Eibishter, so why doesn't the Eibishter just do it directly? Why does he give us the power and we have to do the work? And that is the concept, what Hasidus explains, of a partnership. A partnership, very often in a partnership, one half of the partnership invests the money, and the other half does the work. Okay? Very often in halacha, okay, one person wants to, has money to invest, the other person has ideas and is willing to work hard to make the money grow. So one partner provides the money, the investment, and the other partner does the work, takes the money and uses it and makes it grow. So the same thing when we talk about the Jewish people being in a partnership in creation, what that means is that the Eibishter invests in us the power to make the world and ourselves a suitable vessel for godly revelation. We don't have the power on our own because we're finite, limited beings. And a finite, limited being can work all day and all night and they'll never become big enough, so to speak. Their minds and hearts will never expand enough to receive infinity. It just can't be done. What can be, but if the Eibishter gives us the power to do it, and we do the work, so together we have created a Dira Batachta. Eibishter invests himself into the process, gives us the power, we do the work. Where? What is the process whereby the Eibishter invested that power into us? The process whereby the Eibishter invested the power into us that we could make a physical world with all its finite limitations into a place that's a suitable vessel for God. The place, the point in history where God invested that power into us was at Matan Torah. But what actually happened at Matan Torah was still not the whole story. Because it's true that at Matan Torah was investing us the power to make the world into a suitable vessel for godly revelation. But there's more than that. The ultimate is that we ourselves, as individual human beings, that the Jewish people themselves be suitable vessels for all revelations of God, till the ultimate revelation of God himself. When will we vest, when was that power vested into us? Also at Matan Torah. But there was an event that took place before Matan Torah, which made it possible for that power to be invested in us at Matan Torah. Because the truth is there's a two-step process here. Before God invests that power into the Jewish people, every revelation, everything that comes to the Jewish people from the Eibishter, Eibishter set up a system that there is a leader of the generation, meaning there is an individual soul that is the all-inclusive soul of the entire Jewish people. Any power or any revelation that's given over, or that's invested in the Jewish people, has to pass through that individual first. And once that revelation passes through that individual, who is the all-inclusive soul of the generation, only then is it passed along to the rest of the Jewish people. So he is the pipeline, so to speak, whereby all godly revelation and all godly transfer of power from God to us, everything that comes down to us has to pass through him first. The Rebbe explains in the Sicha at length, and it has to be seen inside in order to be fully appreciated. The Rebbe explains at length that the words at the beginning of our parasha, which starts with Vayema Hashem El Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Boyo Paro, come to Paro. We find a fascinating thing, that after Hashem says come to Paro, he doesn't tell Moshe what to do once he gets there. In the words Boyo Paro appear in last week's parasha as well, but there it says Boyo Paro, and it says tell Paro the following. Here all it says is Boyo Paro, come to Paro, and it doesn't say what Moshe is supposed to tell him once he gets there. What's Moshe supposed to do there? There's no mention of that at all. It just says, come to Paro. And also, the Zohar raises the question, why does it say come to Paro? It should say go to Paro. If A tells B to go to C, so the way you, the word that you use in English, you would say go, you, B, go to C. Or in Hebrew, you would say lech, which means go. When you say come, if you say come to me, it's come to me. But if you say come to him, it's not proper speaking. You don't say come to him, you say go to him. So the Zohar explains, again, without getting into all the details, that what the Eishu was sending Moshe to do with Paro was something that Moshe could not do on his own. And therefore Hashem said, come with me. Come, the reason why I use the word come is to say, come with me. Because Moshe did not have the power to take on Paro on his own. And Hashem said, I will go and I will take on Paro, but you come with me, meaning that I will give you the power. You yourself do not have the power to take on Paro. And the Zohar explains why. Because Paro represents a very high spiritual, very intense level of evil that Moshe was fearful to take on. So Hashem says, you come with me, and I'll, because I have to be the one that does battle with Paro. Why does Moshe have to come along? If the Amish is the one who's going to do it himself, why does Moshe need to come along? So we understand from this that actually Moshe is the one that will confront Paro. But what Hashem is saying, that when you come with me, means I will give you the power. You yourself do not have the power to take on Paro. I will give you that power. So that explains that that's the Zohar's explanation of Paro, as Paro represents a very high form of evil. And that explains that the truth is that we find a different explanation in the Zohar, which describes Paro as representing a very high form of holiness, a very high level of holiness. Zohar Parshas Vayigash explains Paro. The action is going on the words base Paro, the house of Paro. Explains it to mean a very high level of holiness. It explains that everything that exists in evil has its source in holiness. And, and obviously a very high and intense level of evil has a very high and intense level of its source, and holiness is a very high intense level of holiness. Except that in the process of coming down into this world, it passes through all the levels of concealment as it comes down into this world. The way it appears, it manifests in this world, is as something very negative. So the Rebbe explains, what does it mean by a Paro in the sense that Paro represents a very high level of holiness? And what is this very high level of holiness that Paro represents? The Zohar there in Vayigash, the Zohar explains the word Paro to mean from the root that means uncover. And he says, base Paray, the house of Paray means that there is a level in holiness from which is uncovered and revealed all lights, all the Zohar uses a terminology to describe spiritual revelation. He uses the imagery of a light, which is a candle, and a torch. So he says all lights and all torches are revealed from there, and it is this place from which everything that was previously concealed is revealed. So the Rebbe says like this, that in order to understand what it means, the place from which is revealed all lights, all revelations, the Rebbe explains, we have to understand how we experience spiritual revelation. The way we experience spiritual revelation in the normal process of growth is we can only take a little bit at a time. There's only so much revelation that we have the power to experience. So there's how much spiritual revelation we can experience. There's how much. And there is the process. We can only take a little bit at a time. The normal process by which a person grows is you expand your mind a little bit at a time. Just like a person wants to develop their mind intellectually. So there's only so much you could give over to a person. If a teacher would take a student and hit them with everything the teacher knows, all it would do is blow the student's mind. For two reasons. One is the amount is too much. The student's mind can't hold it, it's too much. The other is that it's too fast. The process, the student needs time to process the information. You can take a little bit at a time. And once he can take a small amount, then his mind expands, then he can take a little more. Then his mind expands, he can take a little more. So he can't take too much, and he can't take it too fast. In order to grow and expand our capacity for spirituality, we go through a process. We take a little bit at a time, so there's a limit in the amount we can take, and there's a limit to how intensely we can take it, how fast, and it can be given to us. So the Rebbe explains that base Paray means that at this level in holiness, all the lights are revealed at the same time, and not in any particular order, or not by stages. It's all revealed and all at once. The Rebbe says, "Is paru," also comes from the word parua. Parua means like it bursts out. It's not in a form of, in an orderly fashion, step by step. It just bursts forth. So the Rebbe says, base Paray is a level in holiness in which, from which all revelations come in one shot, not in any order. So a human being is not capable of experiencing that kind of revelation. Because from our perspective, the way we have to experience revelation is, there's only so much we can take. And even the amount that we can take, we need it in gradual stages. We need it to go one step at a time. So we're ready for the, we have to first internalize one level, and then we're ready to go to the next. From God's perspective, God has no limitations. When he decides to reveal, so everything is revealed at once, all in one shot. Only when he decides to make certain adjustments in order to take into consideration the limits of the Makabel, then he creates a process which is called the Shtalshalos, a process whereby you don't get that much, and what you get a little bit at a time. So that's the process of a Shtalshalos, a chain. You work your way up, step by step, slowly. But as it is, the revelation, as it is from the source, within God's essence, revelation is is everything all at once. It's only when God takes into consideration and caters and adapts his revelation to the Mikabel that he creates a process whereby it's how much is revealed is limited, and that it's revealed in an orderly, step-by-step fashion. So base pottery represents such a high, intense revelation that Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid to approach pottery by himself. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't take that kind of revelation. So David she said to him, you know what? You're right. You can't. But I can give you the power to take. You on your own, you don't have the power to receive such a revelation. Because you're a human being in a physical body, you have limitations. I, on the other hand, have no limitations. So I can give you the power to receive that kind of revelation. So what it says, by El Paroi, and now as we're understanding Paroi to mean, Paroi as it is in holiness. So when it says by El Paroi, what he's saying is, you come with me, I'm giving you the power to receive everything, all at once. So that's what he's saying. It's only the imagery is of I am going there and taking you with me. What's really what he's saying is that I am, what it means is that you need me to give you the power to be able to be able to receive that revelation from me, not of me, that revelation from me. But you can't experience, no, it's still ultimately, Pari is still ultimately a level of, is ultimately on the level of revelation. It itself is not, Atzmus is the source of the revelation. Beis Pari is revelation. It's just revelation as it originates from its source, but it's still revelation. So he's saying, in order for you to be able to take that revelation, I have to give you the power to receive it. Now the truth is that you can take this a step further. We could have an even deeper understanding of what it means, Pari and holiness. I could say, we said that a teacher could give a student only so much, and even that amount that he can give the student has to be done in an orderly fashion, step by step. So the knowledge that the teacher has is infinite relative to the knowledge of what the student's capacity. Even though we're talking about a human teacher and a human student, what the teacher knows is also ultimately finite. But we can call it infinite relative to the capacity of the student. Now, what if the teacher had the capacity to communicate to his student everything he knows all at once? So what he would do is he would be breaking the student out of two limitations. One is the limitation that the student has in terms of amount, his capacity, how much could the student hold. And the fact that he's taking the student out of the limitation of that normally in order to process information, you have to do it one step at a time. But the Rebbe says that there is another limitation. Let's say I could give you a lot of information at one time. But ultimately, I could take all that information and still break it down into little bit pieces. It's true, it's a lot of information at once. Compared to what I'm capable of taking, it's totally beyond my capacity. But the truth is that if you look at the actual information I'm receiving, it actually can be broken down into bits and pieces. It's just the teacher's not bothering to break it down into bits and pieces. He's giving it to me all at once. But what's he giving to me? He's giving to me a lot of different ideas, just giving it to me all at once. But each idea is a separate entity unto itself. So the limitation is in terms of going out of the limit, the infinity, so to speak. The going beyond the limits is in terms of amount and in terms of the process, how it's being communicated. But what's actually being communicated to me is not infinite. It's just a lot of finite ideas together which create, relative to my capacity, an infinity. It's an infinity of parts. Okay? So Chassidus explains this two types of infinity. There's an infinity of numbers. Right? We have in mathematics is the concept of the infinity of numbers. Each number is finite. one, two, three, four, five, six. Each one of those numbers is a finite number. So it's true, it's an infinity of numbers, but each number itself is finite. It's an infinity of finite parts. So the answer is like this. There's another way of understanding what it means, the revelation of Father. That even in the finite parts themselves, one can sense and experience the infinity that is contained within them. In other words, it's not that it's an infinity of parts. It's that that infinity itself is expressed in the individual part. In other words, that with, like for instance, a teacher who has an infinite understanding and has the capacity to invest into a finite idea, what he communicates to the student is a finite idea. But he has the capacity to invest his infinite understanding into that finite idea. So it comes out that that each idea itself that he's communicating to the student is in itself contains infinite. It's not just an infinite number of ideas in an infinite manner, meaning not given all at once, not in an orderly manner, but actually each idea itself, each revelation itself, even as it appears to be a finite revelation, contains within it, has infinity invested within it. There's two types of infinity as it relates to time. One is an infinity of time, forever. Forever and ever means just an infinite amount of minutes, hours, days, and time will just keep going on. Then there is infinity which is above time. It's infinite meaning there is no time and it can't be broken down into minutes, hours, days. Just like you have in numbers, you have an infinity of numbers. Then you have infinity as it's above numbers. It can't be counted. There are no numbers in infinity. So, similarly, or in other words, what's an example of this where the infinite is invested into the finite itself? For example, if it would be possible to be within time and above time at the same time. So we have such a concept, which it says that in the Holy of Holies, in the Beis HaMikdash, there was an Aron that was placed in the Holy of Holies. And we are told that Makim HaAron Eino Min Amida, the space that the Aron occupied, was not included in the measurement. What does that mean, it was not included in the measurement? Let's use the measurements of the Mishkan. Okay? The Holy of Holies in the Mishkan was 20 amos wide. The Aron was 2.5 amos long. So what happens when you put an object that's 2.5 amos long in a space that's 20 amos? When you measure the floor space, all you have left is the floor space that's left would be 17.5 feet. Because you have amos. You have 20 amos minus 2.5. Because the iron is in the way. If you were measuring the floor space, so the actual distance from wall to wall is 20 amos. But if you're actually measuring the floor space, since you have this 2.5 amma object in the middle of the floor, so if you were measuring the floor space, you'd only get 17.5. The Gemara tells us that's not what happened. If you measured the floor space, you still got 20. If you measured the iron, now the iron has exact measurements. So the iron has to take up space because it has very exact measurements. It's not the proper measurements. It's not a kosher iron. So if you measure the iron, it measured 20.5 ounces. If you measure the floor, it measured 20 ounces. Which means that the iron took up space and did not take up space at the same time. At the exact same time that it took up space, it did not take up space. So it's a finite object with all the limitations of space, because it has to have exact measurement. So it's a finite, limited object with all the limitations of space, and yet at the same time, it's infinite and above space. It has none of the limitations of space, and all of the limitations of space at the same time. So the Rebbe says this is a similar idea to when we say that this deeper understanding of what it means, that all revelations reveal in one shot, means not only a lot of separate revelations just all revealed together at one time, but that each revelation itself is finite and infinite at the same time. Within each individual revelation, one grasps the finite character of that revelation, and one senses the infinity that's invested into it at the same time. In Kabbalah, in the language of Kabbalah and Spheres, all of the Spheres, which Spheres are finite revelations of God, have God's infinite light invested into them. So really, ultimately, every Sphere is finite and infinite at the same time. Except we don't see it that way. From our perspective, we only see the finite. But if at the source, if we have the revelation at the, from the source of all revelation, at the source of all revelation, every, because it extends from that which is truly infinite, from God Himself, which is the source of infinity and finite at the same time. So at that point, revelation is experienced, all revelations at one time, in a way that in each revelation that's included in all these revelations, one senses the infinity which is the source of them at the same time. So there's this, this is something which we will experience in the time of Gaul. But in order for us, to experience this at the time of the Gaul, we have to be ready for it. But we don't have the power to receive such a revelation. Where do we have the power? So the Rebbe explains, you're right, we don't have the power. Even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have the power. But the Eivishter can give us the power. How does he give us the power? First, he gave the power to Moshe Rabbeinu. Bayo Parah. Moshe Rabbeinu now received the power to experience infinite revelation. The revelation of all that is infinite and all that is finite in one fell swoop. That made it possible for that power to be transferred to us at Matan Torah. What does this mean in a person's individual avodah? What it means in a person's individual avodah, and what does it mean in terms of the times we're living in now? In a person's individual avodah, what this means is that the Jew has a Jew has the capacity to be finite and infinite at the same time. A Jew has the capacity to operate under all the rules and limitations of time and space. There's only so much time. There's only so much space. There's only so much time you have to learn Torah. There's only so much, so many mitzvahs you can do. There's only so much you can do. And yet, the Jew has the capacity to be connected to above time and space at the same time that they're operating within time and space. At the same time that a Jew is doing a mitzvah, and mitzvahs have very exact rules. You have to do the mitzvahs exactly. They're very clear, defined, finite, definitive rules on how to do a mitzvah. Torah is also very specific. There are specific words and ideas and concepts which are included in Torah, and anything that's not that is not there. So everything you learn, everything you do is very specific and defined and limited. If you do it exactly this way, it's a mitzvah. If you do it a different way, it's not a mitzvah. All the details exactly right. And yet, a Jew has the power to experience in the doing of a mitzvah, how in that mitzvah is invested all the revelations of God Himself. To be operating within time and space, and to be totally above time and space at the same time. It does sound like a contradiction. That's our problem. Our problem is that to us it's a contradiction. And we're right. From our perspective it is a contradiction. But to God, there are no contradictions. Because to God, He's the source of everything. He's the source of time and space. He's the source of what's above time and space. And He can put the two together. And He can give us the power to put the two together also. We, in and of ourselves, we don't have that power. But He can give us the power. And what the Rebbe is telling us is that He did. And so too, in one's experience of God. How one experiences godly revelation. He can give us the power. In order to experience the revelation of the Geula, which the revelation of Geula is, the revelation of God Himself. With the revelation of God Himself comes the revelation of, meaning all revelations will have one. In a way that each of those revelations express God Himself, meaning that in each finite revelation, which we get all together all at once, is expressed the infinity of God Himself. So to us it sounds like, what, when, where, how, me, what are you talking to me? I'm not holding by that. I don't even really understand what we're talking about. Forget about me being ready for that. And the answer is, hey, you're not. But I can give you the power. But the premise of my giving you the power is that you use the power. I don't give you, if I wanted to just give it to you as a gift, she says, I could have created a perfect world that way on the first thing. I don't want to give it to you as a gift. I want to give you the power, but you have to develop the power. You have to put it to use. So what does it mean? You're telling me I have this power, but it doesn't feel to me like I have any special power. I get up in the morning and I feel like little old me. I mean, I don't feel like I have any great powers. I don't feel like I have any great anything. You're telling me powers, infinite, finite, revelation, all at once, together, what? Sounds great, but what does it have to do with me? I don't feel like I have any power. So the Rebbe explains that if the Rebbe continues on in the Sifra, and the Rebbe says, what is the difference between, as he connects it to Yud Shvat, says, what is the difference between the previous generation and this generation? So the Rebbe explains, just as Moshe Rabbeinu had to be given the power to receive the revelation of Matan Torah from the Eibishter, and only from him could now the Jewish people have the power to receive the revelation of Matan Torah. The Rebbe says the same thing is true of redemption. In order to receive these revelations of redemption that we're describing, that power has to be invested into the leader of the generation. And the leader of the generation can give it over to us. The Rebbe says that one of the examples that we see by Moshe Rabbeinu, that besides for the issue of what Moshe Rabbeinu himself was capable of receiving, we find another problem by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said to God, I don't have the power to communicate whatever it is that I receive to the Jewish people. My mouth and my tongue are heavy. I can't communicate. So even whatever revelation I do have already, I can't communicate to anybody else. And again, as it's explained in Chassidus Hashem, why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was on such a high level that he couldn't bring it down to the level of everybody else. He couldn't communicate it because it was too high. And he couldn't communicate down to the level of everybody else. So the way Chassidus explains Hashem's answer, Hashem said, who gave man a mouth? Who gave man the power to speak? I did. So Chassidus explains that, what is Hashem answering? You're right, you don't have the power. But I do. I can give you the power. So we have here a similar thing playing out where Moshe Rabbeinu says, on the one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't have the power to receive such high revelation. We also find Moshe Rabbeinu saying, I don't have the power to communicate such a high revelation. And again, the Eibishter says to him, you're right, you don't have the power, but I can give you the power. So the Rebbe says, this is the significance of what took place on Yud Shvat. What took place on Yud Shvat? On Yud Shvat, Parshas Bo'ot, what we saw by the Friedrich Rebbe was the Stalkus. What does the Stalkus mean? The Dalai Lama explains what a stalkus means is that there are certain things that the tzaddik has that he can't communicate. There's certain levels of holiness that a tzaddik has that he can't communicate because he's too high. He can't bring it down to the level of the people because he can't communicate through physical means. When the tzaddik goes out of his physical body, then the limitations of the physical body are no longer there. So his followers, those who are connected to him, can actually in some way get more from him than they could when his soul was limited in the physical body. There's certain ways that we can get more from a tzaddik after his istalkus than we can get while he's still alive, because there's certain things that a tzaddik has that are too high, he can't communicate them. And when those revelations from the tzaddik leave the limitations of his physical body, so in some ways they become more accessible to us. So the Rebbe says, so what does that mean? So the Rebbe says that means that by the Friedrich Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe experienced Bayopara, which means that he received all the revelations of the Gaul. But he could not communicate them to us. And that's why he had his stuff. And the Rebbe says this idea that the Friedrich Rebbe did not have the capacity to communicate to us all of the revelation that he experienced is actually in the same way that we saw by Moshe Rabbeinu, that his speech was affected. Just as we saw by Moshe Rabbeinu that his speech, he could not communicate verbally, we saw the same thing happen by the Friedrich Rebbe, that he could not, his capacity to communicate verbally in the last years was limited. So this is an expression of the idea that he was experiencing very great revelation. By him it was already la'alta l'gula, he was ready for redemption immediately, but he couldn't communicate it down to us. He couldn't bring it to us. The Rebbe says, this generation, however, is different. This generation is different, that in this generation, the leader of the generation who experiences the revelation of Gula does have the power to communicate it to us. And the Rebbe says, one of the things that you see the difference between this generation and the previous generation is the tremendous spread of Yiddishkeit and Chassidus. And the Rebbe also connects this with Jewish women, and connects this with the fact that we see a tremendous increase in women lighting Shabbos candles. So that's the proof that our generation is ready for all revelations all at once, without, and that within the revelations themselves should be expressed in film. So the question is, where do you see the connection? Where do you see that? Because our generation spread Yiddishkeit more, in our generation spread Chassidus more, and in our generation more people take a match and light a candle. That's proof, that's an indication that we're ready for the highest, greatest revelations. What is it? What it means is, there's two kinds of powers that people have. There's a power that you have which is your own power. And then there's a power that you have which someone else gave to you. What's the difference? Your own power you feel even before you use it. When a person approaches, okay, something in order to lift it, the first thing they do is try to feel, am I strong enough to lift it? How do you know if you're strong enough? Because you can feel how strong you are. If you think about it, concentrate on how strong you are, you can actually feel how much strength you are. So you don't even have to actually pick the thing up to find out if you can pick it up. You can actually feel, you know how much it weighs, you can feel inside yourself if you have the strength or not. So there's certain strengths and powers that we have, right? You pick up a safer, you look at it, you can look at it for 1 second and see, is this something that I can understand or not? You don't have to learn the whole thing to see if you can understand it. Just by taking one look, you can generally have an idea. Do I have enough brain power for this or not? Sometimes, if you don't, someone can teach it to you by breaking it down into small pieces of information. They can teach it to you. But you basically know how much power you have, how strong each one of your strengths are. But what does it mean when a power is invested in you? When God gives you a power? When God gives you a power, or somebody gives you a power that's not yours, so you're not conscious of having it. It doesn't feel like yours. You know when it starts feeling like yours? Only after you actually use it. For example, the Rebbe comes along and the Rebbe says, Chassidim, I am now giving you the power spread Yiddishkeit and Chassidus in the whole world. Everybody else who heard about this cracked up laughing. Spread Yiddishkeit and Chassidus. Everyone is running away from Yiddishkeit. Give it up, should come back. And even people who never knew anything about Yiddishkeit should embrace Yiddishkeit and Chassidus. You think? Impossible. Everybody following. It's impossible. Ever since, you're right. It is impossible. I'm not telling you that it's possible. I'm not coming to tell you, you thought it was impossible, now I'm telling you it's possible. So that's not what I'm telling you. I'm telling you it is impossible. But that I am giving you that power. I am giving you the power to do something impossible. So the thing is, how do we know if we got that power from the devil or not? There's only one way you can find out. If you do it. Somebody does it. It feels impossible. To me, it feels impossible. What can I do? The Rebbe says, do it, so I'm going to do it. It feels impossible. And then what happens? I'm doing it, and it works. I say, hey, the Rebbe gave me this power. I have the power. It's not my power. The conscience of the Rebbe. It's not my power. Because if you would have asked me if it's possible, I would have told you, no, it's impossible. I can't do it. So it must be, it's not my power, it's the power that the Rebbe gave. Where did the Rebbe get the power from? The power that God gave him. So the Rebbe says, see that power that I gave you to spread Yiddishkeit all over the world? In a way that it was never done before? You know the power that I gave you to spread Chassidus all over the world in a way that it never was before? And one of the expressions of that power that I gave you is that now the world has more light in it than it ever had before. Because more people are lighting candles, okay, than were before. So the Rebbe says, those are only expressions of the fact that I gave you the power to do something which is technically impossible. The Rebbe says, the same thing is with experiencing godliness, godly revelation. If you come to me and you say to me that you could experience revelations of Atzilus, you know what Atzilus is? You can experience revelation of infinite life. You can experience the revelation of all lights all at once in a way that in every life you experience the infinite. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have any power like this. But Rebbe says, you're right. You don't? I do. But I am giving you that power. So everyone says, what do you mean? It's impossible. I am giving you the power to do the impossible. But you have to do it. So in other words, depending on how connected you are, so in other words, when we talk about Iskashus, we can talk about the warm, fuzzy feelings of Iskashus, we can talk about all kinds of wonderful things connected to Iskashus, the brachas, and all the wonderful things. But ultimately what Iskashus is really about is, but the Rebbe says, I am investing in you an infinite power. There is nothing that you can, there is no revelation spiritual of any spiritual level that you cannot receive. But that's only if, but why aren't you receiving all these revelations? Because you're measuring your capacity based on what you think is possible. And if you look at your capacity based on what you think is possible, then what you think is very limited. There's only so much you can learn. There's only so much you can know. There's only so much you can experience. If you're connected to me and you judge your capacity based on what I tell you is possible, then I'm telling you, you have no limits. The only limits you have are the ones that you impose on yourself. You have no limits in terms of what you can experience in your own spiritual revelation, and you have no limits in what you can communicate to others, because it's not enough to receive the revelation, you have to be able to communicate the revelation. It's not enough for Moshe Rabbeinu to receive the revelation, you have to be able to communicate. It's not enough for the Friedrich Rebbe to receive the revelation, he has to be able to communicate. In our generation, I'm giving you two things. The power to receive revelation and the power to communicate. Till now, we mostly emphasized the power to communicate. The power to spread Yiddishkeit, to spread Chassidus, to spread Torah mitzvahs. And that's where we saw the mayhem. But we never really tried to tap into our power to receive.
Just do it.
How do you do it? How do you go spread Yiddishkeit and Chassidus in the world? So the thing is like this. The thing is like this, and this is another important element that we have to talk about when it comes to discussion. In the Maimon Basra Lagani, the Friedrich Gedever brings, that what happened, like Kalipra, the difference between Kedusha and Kalipra is that Kedusha, whatever it receives from God, it always stays connected. And Kalipra, whatever it receives from God, it becomes separated. It swallows it up. It swallows the revelation, meaning it's separate from God. And he expresses this with an example. Yaakov came to Paray and he gave Paray a blessing. The land of Egypt gets no rain. The way that the water, the way that the agriculture, the farms in Egypt were watered, is when the Nile rises, they had irrigation ditches. When the Nile rises, it fills the ditches and that waters the whole country. So Yaakov gave Paray a bracha that says like, but the problem is, what happens if the Nile doesn't rise? If the Nile doesn't rise, you can't schlep pails of water, not pails of water, to water a whole country. If the Nile doesn't rise, everybody stops. So Yaakov gave Paray a bracha. He said to Paray, I'm giving you a bracha that whenever you walk over to the Nile will rise. The Nile rises, it fills all the irrigation ditches, and the whole country is watered. Paray says, yeah, that's an amazing thing. Every time I walk up to the Nile, the water's going to rise. Amazing. Let me try. Paray tries and it works. He does it for a day. He does it for a week. Does it for a month. Does it for a year. And after a while, he says, hey, look how powerful I am. I'm this really powerful guy. Everyone in the country is dependent on food in order to survive. In order to get the food, you need the Nile to provide the water. And in order for the Nile to provide the water, you need me to walk over to the Nile. He says, hey, why is everybody worshiping the Nile? Everybody worship me, because I'm the one that makes the water rise. So what happened here? Yaakov, that a person should walk over to the Nile and the Nile should rise is impossible. Paray doesn't have such a power. But Yaakov does, right? Yisrael saw that Moshe Rabbeinu, that the water rose to greet him. He knew he's a descendant of Yaakov. How do you know he's a descendant of Yaakov? Because he knew Yaakov gave Paray that power. So Yaakov has the power to make water rise. So when he walks over the water, water rises. So Yaakov says, Paray, you don't have the power. I'm giving you the power. So what happens? After a while, Paray starts thinking, hey, it's mine. So the same thing, that ever gives us the power to go out on shlichus and do things which are impossible. So the first people who went out on shlichus said, well, it's impossible. The Rebbe says, you can do it, so you have to do it. So they went out, they did it, and they were successful. Why? Because the Rebbe gives people the power to do things that are impossible. But what happens if you're doing impossible things for a lot of years? You start thinking, hey, it's possible, look how powerful I am, I can do all these things. So you start thinking it's you that's doing it. And you say to everybody, hey, look up to me, because I'm the one who's doing it. The problem is you forgot where all the power is coming from. You don't have any power. The power is coming from the devil. So the devil says the same thing when it comes to Geula. When it comes to Geula, people say, I don't have the power to receive Geula. And other people say, I don't have the power to communicate Geula. I can't tell people about Geula. They're not ready for it. I'm not ready to receive it. And I don't have the power to communicate. Along comes the devil says, you're right. You don't have the power to receive it, and you don't have the power to communicate it, but I do. And in fact, people will tell you, I can't talk about Gula, I can't talk about this thing. Yeah, people, the Rebbe can do anything, but I can't do it. And he says, you're right, you can't receive Gula, and you can't communicate Gula. The Rebbe says, but I can, and I can give you that power. In fact, that's my job. My job is not to experience geula for myself and not be and not communicate it to you. That's what happened in the last generation. My job is to take all those things which are impossible, all those powers that God vested in me, and give them over to you. That's my job. And that's what I have done. So when people approach their own learning in terms of what they can receive, if you approach it from the perspective of your limitations, very limited. But if you approach it from the perspective of the power that the Rebbe gives me, then there's no limit. And the same thing in what you can communicate to others. If you look at it from the perspective of what, how good a speaker I am, how good a teacher I am, how effective a communicator I am, you're very limited. There's only so much you can give over, there's only so much you can communicate. You have limitations. But if you look at it from the perspective, who cares what my limitations are? The question is, what could the Rebbe do? And the answer is, the Rebbe could communicate anything. So if the Rebbe could communicate anything and he invested that power into me, then I can communicate anything, not because it's my kayach, but because it's the Rebbe's kayach. And that's, when we talk about iskashus means realizing that everything you have done all along till now was with the Rebbe's kayach. And therefore, there's no limit to what you can accomplish from here on in. As long as you give over yourself to the Rebbe, and therefore in turn receive those treasures to experience redemption through all spiritual revelation without any limit in your own life, and experience the power to communicate the highest spiritual revelation with no limits. One of the things that people say is, listen, if you want to teach people, you want to go out into the world, you want to talk to them about Mashiach and Gula, you have to do it step by step. You can't give them everything all at once. You can't hit a person with everything all at once. You have to give them a little bit at a time, step by step. It's a process. Then it says, no, Vayo Parai. Parai means everything all at once. That's what Vayo Parai means. That God gives Moshe Rabbeinu the power, the revelation of everything all at once. And the power that the Jewish people can experience everything all at once. In a way that everything that is revealed to them, they can sense the infinity within the everything all at once. The Rebbe says, I have the power, but that's not enough. I have to give it over to you so that you communicate, so that you experience it, and you communicate everything all at once. And that is the measure. The measure of our discussion to the Rebbe is both in terms of what are we receiving. The Rebbe is telling us what he's giving us. And if the question is, if I want to know how connected I am to the Rebbe, is am I receiving all those things that the Rebbe says he's giving to me? And am I communicating all those things that the Rebbe says he gave over to me to communicate? And that is the last thing, as the Rebbe says in this sikha, that the spiritual eyes of a Jew are already open and already see the redemption. What's missing is the opening of the physical eyes, that we should actually see in a physical, tangible way that we have the power to receive. There's no limits to what we can receive, and there's no limits to what we can communicate. That this generation, there's no Indian of nostalgia, that any process that we live through and experience is not because of a limitation of the capacity to communicate. There's no real limitation of the capacity to communicate. There's no real aim of the selfish. What's left is only that we receive what is being given to us, and that we communicate it to others, that we open our eyes and see how we have been given everything, and how we have the power to receive, as well as communicate everything, including the full and complete redemption, and the full and complete revelation of Mashiach.